Hello, everybody. This is Clint Locklear with a rant of a free trapper. I want to say I may be in a coughing fit or have to stop this off and on. And I'm going to explain why here in a second. But we finally got some really nice weather. I mean, we got down in the 30s. And leaves are still on the trees. Our trapping season's not open yet. So according to Matt Jones, when I talked to him last year at the Southern National, he said about the only time catfishing's not good is when the leaves are falling off the tree. So hopefully I can get over this I've got and go get one more good run of catfish in the freezer. I went to Florida last week. It's our vacation. It's something I did. So if you put an order in, you know, that's the reason I put... Always check my website, guys, because we don't have staff. I know that's hard for a lot of guys to imagine. It's me and Travis, and the way that I'm doing my shipping now, it got a lot more complicated. And so if I'm not here, we can't ship. So like at conventions or if I go on vacation or something like that, always check the front of the website. And normally in big red letters, I say we're not shipping until the date of... And that way you'll know exactly that it's going to be a week or 4 days or whatever it is before your order goes out. That's about the only way I know how to do that. I don't want to get on here and say I'm going to be gone, you know, for so many days. On a podcast, it's just not, for security reasons, it's not very good. So, you know, just kind of keep that in mind. I want to thank our sponsor, as always, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan out of Ohio. I mean, excuse me, out of Iowa, not Ohio, he's going to shoot me. Out of Iowa, he's got pretty much everything you'd want, guys. He carries all my stuff. He ships internationally. He's on Amazon, eBay, Bonanza, Walmart. He's got his own websites. He's all over the place, and he does an extremely good job on prices and extremely good job in customer service. And pretty much anything you'd want trapping, he can take care of you. So Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, my hat's off to him. And if you enjoy listening to this, then, you know, give them a shot before you place your next order. It would really be a good thing. Now, as you can tell, I probably don't sound the same, and I don't quite know what is going on. But me and my wife went down to Florida, and we didn't know. We went to Destin. Now, it's amazing to me, like from a survival point of view, 25 miles to the east of where we were at was destroyed. I'm talking flattened buildings, roads gone, electrical outlets, no restaurants, no stores, no anything. Where we were at in Destin, you would have never known a hurricane went through there. The only thing is it changed the way the beaches were as far as the sand. It pushed a lot of sand really, really shallow for a long way up, which makes it harder to surf fish. But no downed trees, nothing was closed, no windows were blown out. You're talking 25 miles over towards Panama City and Mexico Beach. They got destroyed. And it was just weird for me to think about that at 25 miles away. You know, I'm eating seafood and on the beach and going fishing. And 25 miles away, people's lives are absolutely turned upside down. Just how weird that is. But there was something that was going on down in Destin. In a lot of parts of the Gulf this year, which is not normal for the Gulf Coast. And there's some lessons here. You know, this is where you should learn to do your own research. And I'm going to say something here that will probably get some people a little upset. When we make fun of environmentalists and we make fun of, you know, the green people and the do-gooders and stuff like that, most of the time we do that, it's kind of like a post I just did on Facebook. I got a link, I think it was from Chip, where PETA is now saying that milk, since it's white, is the drink of white supremacists. I mean, you got the absolute crazy, crazy stuff that goes on. And then you've got some other things with environmentalists that actually make a lot of sense. And because we, for some reason, are a modern society, we can't pick and choose information that's good anymore. It's either us or them, which is the reason, you know, we make bad decisions if we're not an environmentalist, and the reason environmentalists make bad decisions because they are environmentalists. But normally with most things in the world, somewhere in the middle is a little bit closer to truth because everybody wants to exaggerate or ignore on our side, which is not the crazy environmentalist. And environmentalists want to exaggerate over and over again. Now, one thing that the environmentalists do that conservatives hate is they try to look at the underlying cost of society on certain things. And again, they exaggerate tremendously, which turns it off because it's like a kid that's always crying wolf. After a while, you just blow it off. If they quit exaggerating, some of their points would probably stick with some conservatives. Now, one of the things they do when you look at the cost of monocultures and chicken houses and CAFO places where you keep your cows and all the pesticides and the fertilizers and the herbicides and how they're tainting a lot of wells around the country, and how now that even kids that are only 6 months old actually have Roundup in their system, you know, all this type of stuff. What they do is they will try to put a cost on what that is to society. And because it's such a big thing and such a, you know, it may not seem like a big thing to an individual, but spread out over society, there's a humongous cost involved. And that's one of the ways they try to get people to pay attention to what they're doing. The problem is they mostly exaggerate. But I'm going to tell you about something today that needs to be thought about in the way that it needs to be thought about. And it's not from an environmentalist point of view, and it's not from a conservative point of view. It's just from a realistic point of view. Now, I've got several things we're going to talk about quickly. It's kind of a mishmash or a grab bag of stuff. But first thing is red tide. Now, when we were going down to Florida, I got a hold of Ryan Schaefer out in Louisiana because I didn't think we were going to be able to go to Florida because of the hurricane. And we found a what looked like to be a fishing paradise at Grand Isles, Louisiana for reds and speckled trout. So we're talking back and forth with him. And then Cindy started watching these Facebook posts of people that actually have like destined Facebook posts. You know, they talk about stuff going on. They live there. And, you know, even during the hurricane and right after the hurricane, they're showing pictures and it's like nothing happened in Destin. But one thing was said that caught our attention, but we didn't quite understand what it was, is this guy sitting behind a restaurant and he goes, it looks like the hurricane blew the red tide out. Red tide. I've heard of that around Tampa and places further down in Florida where there's really a lot of vegetable production. I've never heard of that in the coast. And I've been going to the coast for 27 years with Cindy, or probably 28 or 29. I probably went before we were married down there. Never once heard this. So it didn't really mean a whole lot to me. You know, you have a harvest moon, it's kind of red, whatever. You know, I didn't really think that much about it. I know it happens a lot in South Florida, and people just don't go swimming and stuff a lot when that's going on, and they wait till it comes out, but I never really understood what it was. So we go down there the first day, and everything seemed fine. I mean, like I said, you couldn't tell a hurricane's been through there except for the sand was unusual for that part of the Gulf. Well, I go, and I can't stay on the beach all day and just sit there and look at waves. I got to figure out something to do, so I went to go red fishing. Now, it's about 89 degrees. There's not a cloud in the sky. It's hot. And there's a bridge that connects Destin and Fort Walton. If you go across the bridge from Destin to Fort Walton, there's a little parking area there. And if you go down the beach out towards the jetty, you can fish there without a permit, like you have to go left because that's an Air Force base. You gotta have a permit for that. But the reds come through there and they circle right up close to the bridge because there's a real shallow part out in the middle, and it's a good place for reds. So I go down there to catch some redfish, love eating redfish, and I'm starting to get hot. So I move my chair where I'm sitting about, you know, about 6 inches below belly button in the water. And you know, there's not waves there because this is the bay. You know, it's not in the ocean. It's only about a quarter mile from the ocean, but it's not in the ocean. So you really don't have waves. So I'm sitting out in there, and it's really, it cooled me off a whole lot. But I'm not catching anything. I mean, I'm not getting a bite. I'm not getting a nibble. I'm not losing bait. I'm casting in different areas. I can't figure out what's going on. Because most of the time the crabs or the bait fish or whatever rob you nothing. Nothing. I sit out there for 6 hours because I'm hard-headed. sitting in the water. The tide changes from outgoing to incoming. When that happens, it blew my mind. I started smelling this really weird smell. I really don't know how to describe it because it's more like a chemical gas smell. And if you've ever get where you're making a bunch of lures in volumes, you have certain things that are really volatile that gets in the back of your throat and it kind of takes your breath away. And that's kind of what this was like. But, you know, I couldn't figure out what this was coming from. I'm sitting in the water. When that tide changed, where the tide starts coming in, I don't know where all these fish were at, but of course the water starts rising and current starts. There were thousands. Let me say that again. Thousands of dead fish that came right where I was at in just a matter of minutes. It looked like a horror show from The Walking Dead or some type of, you know, genocide movie from South Africa where they kill whole villages and throw them in the water. I mean, it was horrific. And the smell, even for a lure maker, was something else. So I don't want to be in there with all these putrefied dead fish. And these are big fish. We're talking like 50, 60 pound reds, sharks, all kind of bait fish. And when the tide started coming up, all the little bait fish that was really close to shore started quivering and started floating to the top. Well, I didn't know what was going on, but I'm pretty sure I didn't want to be sitting in it. So I pull everything up on the bank and I'm looking around and I'm like going, holy cow. You know, so I pack everything up. I go back. I get back. Cindy says they had to come off the beach about the same time the tide changed because everybody on the beach started coughing. Their throats started getting really itchy and they started getting sinus headaches. So we start doing research. Red tide. Now, what was interesting to me is USDA and NRCS, which is a part of the USDA, they had all this information on red tide, but it was almost like it was a natural occurring event. Just kind of something weird that happens in the ocean, and you know, it can be a little irritating, this and the other. The more I keep digging and digging and digging in this, I start finding where doctors are talking about and stuff like that. Red tide, damn near nerve gas. And what causes it is a hyper amount of fertilizer and phosphorus that hits the water. There's a massive algae bloom. So you got all of this stuff coming out of these gazillion of bacteria in the water, and it kills everything. I'm not talking about a few, everything. Well, when you look at Florida, it's sandy, it's flat. They just had a hurricane. You've got a lot of agriculture. Everybody up there puts fertilizer on the grass. When they get big rains, it all goes into the bay. It starts at the top of the bay and ends up in the ocean and goes a couple of miles out in the ocean. Kills everything. And it makes people sick. I've been fighting this. So what you can't tell right now listening to me is I've got a thimble of CMT oil, which is a refined coconut oil mixture that is so slick when you put it in your mouth, it makes like WD-40 seem like sandpaper. I mean, this stuff should be like in our cars. If you get it on you, you can't get it off. So I'm sipping this just to keep my throat from going into haywire because I'm trying to talk. Now, we left early from Florida because a niece of ours, which is 1 year old, the doctor, when she got sick, the doctor said, get her away from the ocean. Me and Cindy, our symptoms kept getting worse, so we left early. We're talking now, it's going to be about 7 days after, and I haven't done any work all week, which is, you know, not good for my business. I shipped out orders, but I couldn't do anything. Which means Travis can't do anything. And, you know, you just sit there. I mean, it's very weird. It's not like a flu or a cold or anything like that. Red tide. So if you hear it's where you're going, don't go. This is not something you're going to suck it up. Trust me. This is not something you want to play with. So that's kind of a warning of red tide. Because it is nasty. The other morning I got up and I thought I was drowning from stuff in my lungs. I'm a pretty healthy person for the most part. That's not something I'm used to feeling. Now, getting back to the environmentalist. Now see, this is something that I think a society should actually look at and the cost of it. What is the value of probably, let's keep it on the low side, 500,000 dead game fish on the coast? You can't eat the shrimp after the red tide's been there for a long time. I mean, there's actually warnings about that. So sailfish, oysters, stuff like that, all those are completely off the economy. People are choking and spitting up and everything, so they're not going out with guide services, which are really big down there. You don't want to go to an oceanside restaurant because it's like you're getting CS gas the way we used to get training back in the Army. Show us you can work through gas. No one wants to deal with that. And people are getting sick. And it seems to happen quicker to younger, like my niece, and I'm sure to older. Because that's the way most things happen. What is the environmental impact costing our society because of this? I bet if you were to do a conservative type study, it would be in the probably hundreds of millions of dollars. Why? Because people use too much fertilizer, too much phosphorus, and they don't do what they need to do to make sure that the ecosystem is in balance so they can grow stuff without just making meth head plants and grass yards everywhere. Because that's what they are. They're just meth head plants. But it doesn't just affect the farmer that's doing that, or the homeowner that's throwing all this crap on their yard because they want to have a green grass in Florida when it's still hot and dry and on sand. It affects everybody. It affected me from Tennessee, and I don't even live down there. I just happen to be down there. And it's still... excuse me. It still is affecting me. Now see, that's something that I would hope that somewhere in the future that environmentalists and conservatives could get together and try to figure something out without all the name calling, without all the exaggeration, or the conservatives always just ignoring. Because if you were in the middle of that down there, like me and all those other people were, it ain't made up. It's not like a computer model of global warming where New York's going to be 30 foot underwater in 3 months. It's not one of those. I mean, you see and smell the dead fish. You see all the sick people. Now, interestingly enough, there wasn't a big warning from anything in Florida about people shouldn't be around it because they want the money. I mean, see, that's always an interesting thing that happens. I'm 100% capitalist, but somewhere along the lines, I think people and societies have to evolve enough where there is a little bit of ethics brought in to capitalism. Because if farmers and landowners and homeowners are causing that type of destruction, they need to be held accountable for that. Because it's real. I promise you, it's real. I don't know if we're ever going to get there. Because even me, all the permaculture, and all the hippies I hang around with permaculture, most of them exaggerate to the point that you just roll your eyes and you don't even listen to them anymore. But a lot of that stuff, if you take the exaggerations away, is some of it's got some merit. And that may seem weird on a trapping podcast to think about that. But it's something I think we need to think about. So I was just going to tell you, and the biggest thing, if you know you're going into a red tide, don't go. Don't take your children, for goodness sake. It's crazy. Now, we're going to get into a mixed bag section of the rant. And hopefully my throat will hold up before I get through this. I've talked to several people at the conventions, and I've had several emails, and I've had some phone calls, and this word keeps coming up over and over and over again. And I think it's the girly society that we live in. I think it's the overindulgence of parents telling children that they can do or be whatever they want to be, and they just have to want it, and all this weird stuff that's going on with helicopter parents and, you know, last 20, 30 years. Confidence. I've heard that from several guys. I don't have the confidence to go out and think I'm going to do very good on coyote trapping. I don't think I have the confidence to go out and make money as a trapper today in the ADC business. Confidence, confidence, confidence. And when I hear this, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say this to somebody, because it's be awkward for one, and I'm not looking for an argument when I talk to somebody else, but it just, I've heard it so much, it's just kind of sticking in my head. Confidence is not a mental exercise. Confidence is not something that comes from education or a YouTube video. Confidence is not something you get from a book. Guys, confidence comes from doing. Doing gives you confidence. Learning how not to do something more than how to do something gives you confidence on how to do something later. Because just think about it from an outdoorsman's point of view. When I started going to Florida with Cindy, I got bored on the beach. So I wanted to start fishing. So you look on YouTube, or you get a book at Walmart on surf fishing in Florida, and where the secret spots are in Destin, which is funny when you think about it, it's because it's now in a book. But, you know, you get this information. And I fished in Alaska, I fished in Tennessee, you know, I'm not the world's best fisherman by any stretch of the imagination, but I have patience, persistence, and a lot of times I'll win out. But I'm looking for this type of information. And you watch the videos or read the book or, you know, read a blog or something like that. And you have this false sense of confidence. And I think that's what people are actually looking for, is a false sense of confidence, not a real sense of confidence. So you get, you know, the certain line with a certain rod and a certain reel and a certain bait and a certain, you know, hookup system, because there's all different kinds people use when you're surf fishing or bay fishing. And you're armed with this self-confidence, and you go out and you get your butt handed to you. Happened to me over and over and over again down there. You know, it's kind of like you can decide you want to go smallmouth fishing. You've never been smallmouth bass fishing. You go to the Tennessee River down here and you talk to some of these old guys. They kind of give you enough information to give you some false confidence. And you don't really do that good and you get discouraged. The learning how not to do it and the learning how to do it is where the confidence comes from. But it's not the act of intellectual learning, it's the act of doing. See, to me, when a trapper says they don't have the confidence yet to go do A, B, or C, what they're looking for is the intellectual, either emotion of confidence or the information confidence that they're looking for. But all that is very fleeting in the real world. How you become confident of being a coyote trapper, an ADC trapper, an otter trapper, whatever it is you do it. The more you do it, the more confidence you get. Like when I run trout lines, I have somewhat of confidence. Sometimes I don't catch anything. Sometimes I think I'm breaking world records. I don't have confidence when it comes to running trout lines. Not in the same sense as if you talk to somebody again like Matt Jones. He knows how to commercial fish. And he knows how to do it in such a way that he has earned the confidence to go out and do what he needs to do. He earned it. You know, it's not an intellectual thing with Matt when it comes to this. He earned it. or you go out with somebody like Randy Smith in Maryland for fox. And he's knocking down 300-400 fox by himself, pretty much. That's very different than reading how Randy Smith goes out and knocks down that many fox by himself in that shorter time, until you go out and you do it. So if you're looking for confidence, guys, no matter what it is, whether it's shooting, self-defense, prepping, making mead, surf fishing, you know, using drags, whatever it is, any type of sports, you're not going to have confidence until you do it. And you do it repeatedly. Because you learn what doesn't work, and you learn what does work, and that what does work, and knowing not how to make the mistake of what doesn't work, that's where this confidence comes from. It's not something, confidence is not going to come from a convention, because I had several people over the course of this year saying, I'm coming to the conventions to get confidence on coyote trapping, for example. That's not, you. There's no way you're going to get confidence. Now, you may get motivated, you may get information, you may get, excited, but it's not going to give you confidence. Confidence only comes from doing. Now, the other thing that, I don't know, so I just wrote some of these things down because, when you're on vacation and different things, you think about, at least I do, I think about weird stuff, so I write them down. Americans love to win. Now, I want to ask you a question, and I want you to think about this. What does winning mean? Now, there's a difference between a game and life. Winning in life is very different from a game. A game is something that's short-term, has rules, and there's points of some kind or another, and you have a winner and you have a loser. Winning in a game. We all know what that means. You play football at four quarters, somebody's won or lost, or you tied. You know, perfect sense. In life or in business or your family life, what does that mean? What does it mean to be a winner? And I think this is where a lot of people get in trouble when it comes to their revenue streams or their business. Are the relationships with their spouse? Are the relationships with their children? Are the relationship with their friends? Winning that way is not keeping score, to me. Winning that way, and I'm not sure what brought this up where I started thinking about this, winning is where everyone around you in that sphere of influence is winning also. See, it's very different to get an argument with your wife where you have to prove the point and until she submits that you're right. That's not winning. That's winning like a game. That's not winning in a relationship. Or most of y'all know that, I do stuff with Jeff Dunlap and F&T. I'm on their show and they support my stuff. See, that's like a little circle, and it's not one tribe that I'm talking about. It's different things in your life. You know, we kind of make a joke. You're like on Team F&T. They go out of their way to make sure that I'm successful. And I go out of my way to make sure that they're successful. And Jeff goes out of his way to make sure I'm successful. And I go out of my way to make sure Jeff's successful. And he goes out of his way to make sure F&T's successful. And there's other people involved in that. But the goal for the winning of that is everybody there is winning. There's not a winner or a loser. When you look at business, you have competition, sure. You have prices and all that stuff, sure. But your business should be everybody in your sphere of influence is winning. Like when I do these podcasts, my goal is for everybody in my influence to win. Not for me to win and them to say that I'm a winner. It's for me to figure out how to help them win because they help me win. And it goes back and forth. I also have another circle of influence that most of y'all know about. And, you know, that's with Chip and Tim and Carl in Memphis. More with Chip and Tim just because I'm more around them. But we're doing things, and you're probably going to get to see some more of Chip, Tim, and Carl on something coming up possibly next year that I had no financial reason for doing except it could help them, which possibly means that somewhere down the road, if I help them, they'll have a way to help me. Not in a selfish way, but a way to do it. Chip's helping me right now with a prototype of a trap. I'm not going to get into it. It's probably 18 months out before anybody's going to know what it is. If it works. He's not doing that because there's money involved in it with him. Because I don't know if there's going to be any money involved in it with any of us. I don't know if it's going to work. Tim has got a nice large audience with Meat Trapper. I've got the platform of Trapping Radio. We're in this little circle of influence with each other. Hey, Tim, why don't you start putting it on Trapping Radio? Maybe reach more people you hadn't done. I don't charge Tim for that. See how that works? That's winning. And if you treat your customers the same way, if you have a revenue stream, watch what happens. Everybody around you starts treating everybody a little bit different. And then winning just becomes a normal daily thing because your sphere of influence, everybody takes care of each other. That's totally different than sports. And I think the analogy people use for sports or war or stuff like that, it can get lost in real life. So just think about that. If you want to win, make sure everybody around you is winning also. Now, another thing that I've came in, I've learned this because I'm not going to go all preachy on anybody, but the meek shall inherit the earth. How many times have we heard that? I heard it all growing up in church. What does that mean? Because to me, meek usually means weak. Because that's kind of what meek, kind of, quiet and not as physical, not as aggressive, you know, let people run over you, that type of thing. That's what meek means today. Now, the reason this stuck in my head, because this blew me away, because this is a verse in the Bible that I've never understood. And the reason was I didn't understand what meek was. Jordan A. Peterson is talking on one of his podcasts and someone brings this verse up to him. And he was saying how that doesn't make sense. And the way we think of meek, it doesn't make sense. Now, Jordan A. Peterson, if you don't know who he is, he's got courses out, 12 Rules to Life or something like that, or I'm not sure exactly what he calls it. He's a brilliant dude. He's not really conservative nor liberal. He's really big on helping people basically be better and not be so anxious and different things like that. It's really amazing some of the stuff he's done. But they ask him that, and meek, he's did all these series on the Bible where when he comes across something that doesn't quite make sense, he goes to theologians and he goes to word experts and he goes to historians and he goes, and what he's trying to do is figure out what the word meek means. Now, interestingly enough, our definition of meek is kind of like we had a drought 3 years ago. In the Bible, it was a dearth. You know, there's definitely word differences in the Bible from what we use now and then. Kind of like love. Was there 7 different ways of love from, you know, I love these potato chips or I love my wife. Language is a weird thing because it's not concrete half the time. Well, he went to all these historians and at the time period that that was written, meek did not mean what meek means to us today. Now, this will probably blow your mind if you've always thought, because, you know, in my mind's eye, when I think of the meek shall inherit the earth, it's kind of like the, a bunch of people that are abused and put in slavery and kind of shuffle around and let everybody tell them what to do, and they never fight back and they never stand up for themselves and all of that. That's kind of what we think of it. What it meant during the time frame that it was written was men that had swords and knew how to use them, but had the restraint not to. Let that sink in a second. Men that had swords, that knew how to use them, but had restraint in using them, shall inherit the earth. You're talking about a drastic difference of context on that saying right there. Basically, it's saying people that can be dangerous but choose not to do, people that can fight but have restraint so they're just not fighting for fighting's sake, shall inherit the earth. Almost like warriors that have self-control will inherit the earth. Not weak, not weakness, not timidness. Kind of like probably what it's like with your great-great-granddad. Would do everything to help everybody else, but if somebody ever threatened him, he would be burying him in the backyard in about 20 minutes and go get a peanut butter jelly sandwich afterwards if he was hungry. Could, doesn't. Not a bully. Not someone that just wants to take from others, but someone that can defend themselves with lethal methods if they need to. That blew me away. Don't know if it blows you away, but I thought that was interesting. Now, the last thing I want to say on this rant is, I don't know if y'all have heard about this, but there was a school where four girls in a consorted effort decided, in their own words, they did not like the way a kid looked. They did not like the way he sounded. They did not want him in the school. They did not want to be around him. So they come up with a plan. And the plan was to accuse him of sexual assault, which they did. Now, they said he did it at his job, which was a swimming pool place where he worked, like a lifeguard type thing. Of course, he got fired. Prosecutors jumped all down his throat. Everybody at school started calling him a predator. Lo and behold, about 3 months later, the girl admitted that it was all a hoax. She just didn't like him. And she wanted him out of her world. So because she didn't like him, for whatever reason, I don't know if he was geeky, goofy, had bad breath, I don't know what it is, they decided that they were going to ruin his life. Because that's what Me Too movements turned into. It's just a way that women and girls have figured out that you can accuse anybody of sexual assault and they are through. Kavanaugh, Supreme Court Justice now, no matter how good of a Supreme Court Justice he is, he's always going to have the asterisk of possible sexual deviant. He's never going to get out from that. His kids, I guarantee you, are probably going to have to be homeschooled because of the accusations that he had against him. No evidence, mind you, but just an accusation. These girls and girls all over the country have found out that they can do this. Now, what's interesting to me is the big thing now, because some lady got on to Ted Cruz in an airport, that he doesn't believe survivors, this, that, and the other. Let me just say something to the world that ought to be said on a daily basis. Just because somebody has a vagina does not mean they can't lie. Because these four girls sure did, and they admitted it. Now, the kid is mentally messed up. He's having to be homeschooled, and he lost his job and didn't get it back. Think about really how sensitive kids are today to their peers, just like we were, even though we want to act like we weren't. How destructive that would be to be accused of that. And now that's just what everybody's going to, oh yeah, but you know, he got away with it, but you know, he did it. And of course he did. If I had children today that was a male, I would be scared to death. You know, I think the reason kids should be homeschooled is so they're not propagandized. Almost now it's getting to where if you're not a female, you need to be homeschooled for your own physical and future safety. Because it's becoming very common now for people just to accuse males of sexual assault because they know no one ever questions them. It's a weapon now. Why would you have your kid in that situation? I mean, why would you take that chance? If I had a son going to college or high school, I would make sure that either he had it in writing or an audio video that the girl would have to comply to whatever. So before they had any physical contact, there should be a contract drawn up that it's full consent from kissing to everything else that's going to probably happen. See, that's insane. But if you don't do that today, you're taking a chance on complete life-destroying events happening to you. Now, women aren't going to want to sign those. Oh, no, I'd never do that. Unless I see you checking out another girl and it pisses me off, then I'll make sure you're destroyed forever. The other thing that drives me nuts in today's world is these girls admitted that it was a hoax. And you know what happened to them? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. If I had a son and a girl came up and said that he committed a sexual assault and I think he didn't, the first thing I would do immediately is get a hold of a lawyer. And I would immediately sue the person that's saying that about my son if I thought they didn't do that for slander. And if their parents opened their mouth, I would sue their parents for slander. And if the school opened her mouth, I would sue the school for slander. And if the investigator opened his mouth, I'd sue him for slander. Excuse me, just a second, guys. What other choice do you have today in modern day America? Because if you don't take the steps to cause recourse for accusing somebody of something they didn't do, the state's definitely not going to. The prosecutor's not going to. There's no laws really against it except for slander. Because I have a feeling if the first thing that those girls did after they accused that of, in 48 hours, they get a letter brought to their front door and handed to them saying that you've been served for slander for this, now there's at least the chance that they're going to have recourse about what happens to them. And if their parents say it, sue them. If the school says it, sue them. If the media says it, it's going to cost you money, but not near as much as you're going to lose if you don't. Because it's not going to go away. It's not going to be good. It's never going to go away. What else can you do today? That's the only thing I can figure that you can do. For you parents out there that have young men, we all know what young men are. We're horn dogs. We've been horn dogs since the beginning of time and we'll probably be forever. Especially when you're young. That's all you think about. That's the goal of everything. You can do really stupid stuff. But the problem now is, it's not that you do stupid stuff. It's just someone doesn't like something else you've said. You could be a conservative and a liberal can go, oh yeah, I got this. Yeah, he went and felt me up at the party and I'm a victim and yada, yada, yada. Destroyed. The lacrosse team in North Carolina, nothing but a hoax. There's stories now of people that are on the lacrosse team that still can't get a job, and they weren't even there when the non-event happened. Just the phrase, lacrosse team, North Carolina. That girl destroyed all those people's lives and people that weren't even on the lacrosse team at the time. Now, if I was king for a day and I could make one law today, if you falsely accuse somebody, you must pay the punishment they would pay if they actually did it. So if there's 20 years for raping a girl, the girl that falsely accuses has to serve 20 years. Not probation, not a slap on the wrist, and not a stern talking to. 20 years. You would see a lot of this disappear immediately. Why? Because there's recourse for that. Are we going to see that anytime soon? Probably not. Because you have to believe a woman. A woman never lies. We all know that. A woman's just as pure and innocent. You know, they would never ever lie about something like that. It's so serious. It is serious. But what's becoming more serious now is the weapon of the accusal. This is something parents are going to have to figure out how to deal with, and I don't quite know how y'all are going to do it. I really don't, because it's not like you can tell them not to, because they're not doing it anyway, and they're getting accused of it. It's just somebody didn't like what you say. Like these girls said, they didn't like how he sounded. They didn't like how he looked. And they wanted him gone. So the easiest thing for them to do is accuse him of being a sexual deviant. And they did. They ruined the boy's life. And absolutely nothing has happened to the girls. Whatever the crime should have been, or the payment for that crime should have been, every one of those four girls should be paying it. Not one day less. Now, the feminists will throw a hissy fit over that, of course, because feminists now seem like their only mission in life is to hurt men. Not equal, hurt. The meek will inherit the earth.